Good morning and welcome, everyone, to Live Dharma Sunday for September 13th, 2015. Hoyo Kubose here. So very glad you joined us. I want to talk a little bit this morning about a daily ritual that Adrian and I do with our dogs. Our dogs are a big part of our family. As many of you may know, we have a 7-year-old yellow lab named Easy and a golden retriever, he must be about 3, named Raku. Raku means easy in Japanese. Take it easy. Be comfortable. In Japanese, they say, Raku ni shite kudasai. Please, just relax, be comfortable. Well, they don't live up to their names. Anyway, what they love to do, their favorite activity, is chasing balls. And there's a dog toy implement called the Chuck It. And this is helps you to throw a ball. Otherwise, you throw your arm out, you get sore arms and everything if you just throw a ball yourself. So this Chuck It is it's about between 2 and 3 feet long plastic, has a handle on one end, and on the other end, it has a little round scoop, and you could put your ball in there. It fits snugly in there, and then you whip that Chuck It, and you could throw the ball real far. Okay, sort of like kind of like a slingshot. Okay. Or you think of like a lacrosse racket, and it cradles a ball in there, except the difference is that it's a tight fit. Not real tight, but snug enough that when you whip that thing around in a throwing motion, and then when you want to release it, you kind of stop the throwing motion, you stop that Chuck It, and then the ball zooms out, okay, and you can get good distance. And there's a sort of a knack about using the Chuck It properly. When visitors come and they see the dogs and we're doing that, and maybe their kids or even adults, they'll say, oh, they want to join in, and if they have never done this before, they get that Chuck It, put the ball in the scoop end, and then when they throw it, sometimes it just goes straight down. They didn't stop that throwing motion 3/4 of the way through. But if they stop it when it's pointing downwards, then the ball's going to go straight on into the ground. Okay? And this is, I'm telling you this because it's important background for this great teaching, that to the dogs, it doesn't matter if you mess up when you try to throw the ball. Or even myself or Adrian, sometimes we mess up and it doesn't go straight or where we intended it to go, and it goes bouncing off to the side, or it hits something and ricochets. It's like slipsies or oops. Okay? But here's the teaching. The dogs don't care. For them, every throw is a good throw. That's a tremendous teaching. And when I introduced our guest to give us a Dharma glimpse, she is the one who said this when she was visiting us for her induction ceremony as a lay minister. And she just said it sort of in passing, I guess. You know, you do this and you notice, you messed up and you threw this one, but the dogs don't care. And she said, oh, gee, every throw is a good throw. But this is the kind of thing that is so rich, so beautiful, that in everyday activities of all kinds, things happen, and there's beautiful teaching there. So I really appreciate that phrase that she said. You could write a whole book on it. Every throw is a good throw. Every day is a good day. Or the enlightenment experience of a famous story in the Zen Buddhist literature. Banzan, I think, was the name of this monk. And the story goes, he was walking in the marketplace and he overheard a customer ask the butcher who had a stall there or a vendor, give me the best piece of meat that you have. And the butcher said, hey, every piece of meat here is the best. And when he heard that, Banzan was enlightened. That's the story. My father, Reverend Guillaume Kubose, in his book, Zen Koans, writes about this, and each koan has sort of a title, and this one is entitled, Everything is Best. Well, you could think about that. Every throw is a good throw. But, you know, every day is a good day. Everything is best. The kind of non-judgmental, taking things as they are. Everyday suchness, right? The suchness of things. How to live with that? How to appreciate and be grateful for anything and everything? Because it's not what's out there. It's your own internal attitude about those things. And when something bad happens, you got to put that bad in quotes. Because X is not the problem. It's how you deal with X. That's the problem. It's not because, oh, this happened to me, or, oh, if I only married somebody else, or, gee, I lost my job, or, oh, this accident happened, I broke my leg. And, of course, whenever I think about these interesting analogies where we learn a teaching from what we do with our dogs or something like this, or, you know, metaphors and analogies and examples and illustrations, you could, if you want to, you could see it in another context. You could see it and say, oh, that's not a good teaching. What about this? What about this? What about under these circumstances? That's not a good teaching. Okay. Then we miss it's important to make the corollary statement that I always think about this when I'm using analogies and metaphors, is that it's not something inherent in those things. Those are just tools. The main thing is you make it work for you. You make it work for you. Of course, you could put the example in a different context and say, well, what about this? Okay. If that's, you know, that's not the point. There's nothing inherent in that example or metaphor itself as absolute. That's what that means. It could mean different things for different people. Okay. But for many of us, it's kind of neat when we see how somebody might be able to see something like this and then say, and make it work for them and say, oh, that's a good way. I'll make that work for me too. See? So that's, I think, an important point. If it doesn't work for you, well, you find one that does. Okay? Well, without further ado, I want to introduce Nico Bioio. Lives in Illinois, and she is part of our LM3 group. I first met her in Hawaii when she was living in Hawaii, and she was a yoga instructor, and she was affiliated with the local Hompo Honganji, and I was a guest speaker for one of their conferences. And so I was there in Hawaii, and as part of the conference, she had volunteered to lead an early morning yoga session for the seniors. So I joined in, and I was very impressed with her presence, her centeredness, and her patience. No hurried feeling about, you know, doing simple Tai Chi type movement, physical movements for the seniors. I mean, this is nothing advanced. It's something very simple and basic. But she's very patient. Huh? And it was very comfortable, okay, I think, for seniors. You don't have to challenge them. You're just being very supportive. And I mention this because that physical flexibility and those movements, her profession and also her bliss, her enjoyment, and her family back in Texas gave her the nickname that somehow of cat. You know how cats stretch? Okay? And in Japanese, and she was interested in Japanese culture and body systems too, cat in Japanese is neko. Neko. But the family could not pronounce it correctly, and they called her Niko. And so that name stuck, but it came from Neko, but her nickname, all of her friends and family call her Niko. Okay. I think her given name is Stacy. Okay. So anyway, when she finished she did her Tisarana, got her Dharma name, I followed the same aspect, and Bio is cat. Okay. And Yo is the sun, so Bioio is an image of a cat lying and stretching in a nice sunlit room, something like that. You know, when it's nice and warm, hey, you feel relaxed and loose. Okay. And of course, the important connotation is it's not just physical fitness and flexibility, it's mental and spiritual too. Okay. So that's where the Dharma name aspect comes in. Well, let's hear what Nico Bioio has to share with us this morning.
Hello, and thank you so much for having me on Live Dharma Sunday. I am very, very pleased to be here today. When I was asked to do a Dharma Glimpse, I was thinking about all the different topics that I could discuss, and I'm sure many of you who've done Dharma Glimpses before know that there can be a lot of things that you can talk about, and it can be difficult to pick a topic. But what I decided to talk about today actually is not what I wrote about. I wrote a big, long Dharma Glimpse about something. And then as I was looking at it this morning, I decided that I wanted to talk about something that was a little more relevant to me right now. and I'm hoping that it will be relevant to you as well. What I'd like to share with you all is that I am today about 15 weeks away from graduating from my educational program with a bachelor's in business management. I'm very excited. It's a really interesting time because I am very overwhelmed and stressed by the workload, but at the same time very excited that I'm so close to being done. So it's kind of a conflict that I'm feeling because I want to be done already and I really don't want to be doing this work, yet at the same time I'm sort of savoring it and thinking this is the last time I'll be doing this kind of work. And then it'll be gone and it will be over and it will never come again. So it's sort of a bittersweet time and I'm really working hard not to judge it, you know, and not to rush through it and not to feel stressed about it in a negative way. So that's my challenge I'm working on today. This week I've had about 5 different research papers due, all about 8 to 10 pages long. It's a pretty good amount of writing that I've been doing. So that said, there's something that I wanted to really touch upon, something I realized that I've been experiencing in my educational process. And I've been in school since the year 2009 is when I went back to school. And I've changed my major about 3 times. I started out as a music major, and then I switched to a communications major for a little while. I went back to music again and then ended up as a business management major. I did actually graduate with an associate's in music, which was really nice. So I did have that under my belt. But one thing that I'm really noticing at this time is how there is a process that happens in education where you do your work and you're critiqued and you're given constructive criticism and feedback from your instructors. And this is something that happens over and over again each course. And I think I'm noticing that because I've been in school so long at this point, I'm starting to feel a little resistant and a little maybe even resentful to being criticized, even though it's constructive. I'm getting to the point where I'm like, okay, I know how to write a paper. Don't tell me how to write my paper. And then I'm stopped and I'm like, why am I feeling this way? Why am I getting agitated? You know, what's this all about? Really thought about it, and I realized that there's just so much you can take, so long of a time period that you can take in which you're receiving a lot of criticism, whether it's constructive or not. There comes a time when you have to stop being evaluated, graded, and judged, and you have to go out on your own and experience life without that judgment, without that feedback from others. You have to stand on your own and decide that, okay, the way I'm doing it is fine. And there will come a time when you do want that feedback and you do want criticism and you do want guidance. And I guess what I'm saying is that I'm ready to stand on my own and I am ready to be my own judge, my own guide. And the way I think this translates into the Dharma is, you know, be gentle with yourself and be aware of how critical you can be of yourself and of others. And that there are times when even constructive criticism might not be warranted. So that is what I want to share with you today. And I want to thank you all for listening. And I want you to have a beautiful day. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Yes, indeed. I think that's a very insightful reflection on the educational process and how it parallels the general human experience of being evaluated, whether it's your own, you know, it's sort of like a teacher-student situation. And we have an inner teacher, too. So we set standards for ourselves. We get down on ourselves. We praise ourselves. Okay. Praise and blame. And I think it behooves us to think about this. How do we talk to ourselves? And sometimes we should challenge our self-talk. And this reminds me of, you know, I was in a psychology background, and there was he was a therapist, but he had a method. His name was Albert Ellis, and he had a method called RET, which stood the acronym for Rational Emotive Therapy. And his approach was, I guess I could say, Buddhistic, in the sense that the famous Dhammapada Sutra, the first line, iconic line, opening line is, all that we are is a result of what we have thought. So Ellis's rational emotive therapy, one of his major concepts is irrational thoughts. The opposite of rational, but irrational. Really doesn't make any sense, but we have these thoughts, and when you have whatever thoughts you have, then a certain emotion will follow it. So, for example, supposing your boyfriend breaks up with you, and then you have the thought, oh, why did this happen to me? I'm never going to find another guy. This is, life sucks. And then, of course, you really get discouraged. Sometimes this is called overgeneralizing or catastrophizing, making a catastrophe, being a drama queen, or all these phrases. Huh? Where you just jump overboard and say, because you feel so that you got jilted. Then you just say, man, I'm never, you know, somebody might, then your friends will try to give you perspective and they'll say, hey, there's a lot of other fish in the sea or so forth. Okay. Or maybe you lose a real good job. You say, I'll never find another good job like that. The words never, always, these are irrational thoughts or assumptions. Okay, you know, of course, something better will come along, or you know, it's irrational. And Ellis, in his system, he says, you know, we talk to ourselves like this, and we should become aware of the importance of these cognitions, these irrational cognitions, because the way we talk to ourselves will influence the road that our body and emotions will follow those thoughts, amplify things. Okay. And sometimes we're not aware that we're thinking these irrational thoughts. So he says you should challenge, first become aware of your self-talk, and then challenge them and say, hey, is that really common sense? Am I overreacting? Maybe I should calm down, or, you know, not do anything rash, not act on those thoughts and emotions. I see it. Okay, I got that. Okay, let me process a little bit here. And he, in fact, says something like, here are 10 basic irrational thoughts that most of us have. I can't remember all of them, but for example, one would be, I should be loved by all people at all times. I should be competent in all things at all times. Now, of course, these are two examples of irrational thoughts. And we act as though they're true. Otherwise, why do we get upset when somebody, you know, at somebody that hurts us, or when we mess up doing something? Nobody's perfect. Okay. But we seem to live that way and have the feelings that correspond to that and get all pushed out of shape about those times. Okay. When it's irrational that you should be such a perfectionist about those things. Okay. And these are sort of what I would call meta assumptions. Most of the time, we're not aware of it. Okay? Because it seems like we live like, yeah, we should be liked by all people at all times. We should never have any off moments. Okay? We should, it even hurts us when a fool, somebody that we don't even like, disrespects us. Okay? We don't try to understand where that's coming from, or if that's that person's problem, or we take it personal. Okay. Or we look foolish. Okay. Why do we get so upset? We're supposed to never be foolish, never make a mishap? That's kind of irrational. Okay. So when we judge ourselves like that, it's what I think the Dharma Games was about. It's very pervasive. Okay. The role of expectations, internal standards. How do we get that center within? Huh? How do we just see the suchness of things? That's how I, well, those, of course, titles of my father's, books, Center Within and Everyday Suchness. But you could relate those fundamental teachings of suchness and Center Within as good teachings within the context of what the Dharma Glimpse was talking about. She said she's ready to go beyond that constructive criticism aspects. Huh? And she was in education so long in the process, being a student, okay? She's ready to take a step and go beyond that, okay? And all of us should be able to do that. Even if we're not a formal student, we put ourselves into that kind of a relationship with our inner teacher, okay, or with other people who are just living their lives, but if their lives interact with us, whether it's family members, strangers that you meet, coworkers, okay, whenever you talk about relationships, you're talking about some kind of interaction, an interpretation of what happens in those interactions. You could consider it, similar to the educational interaction of teacher-student, the whole thing. We're always students. We're always teachers, too, to somebody else or in some other context, to ourselves and whatnot. So there's a lot of meat there. That's all for today's broadcast. Till next time, keep going. And you have a very beautiful day. Thank you.